Case number 11-1307, Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality Petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Slade for the petitioner, Mr. Carson for the respondent.
May it please the court. I'm Lynn Slade. I represent the petitioner, Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality. I reserve a minute for rebuttal. I will argue first that EPA, in its new source review rule, failed to establish statutory prerequisites for adopting a federal plan in non-reservation areas of Indian Country. Second, that even if it could, its conclusion that it could assume federal regulation over all areas described as Indian Country by a federal criminal statute was authorized by a delegation only regarding areas within the tribe's jurisdiction. The NSR rule conflicts with the structure and text of the Clean Air Act. In 1970, Congress...
Excuse me, Mr. Stead, I'd like you to focus specifically on where the record you argued that to the EPA that that the EPA that the not the question of their authority to impose a FIP, but your predicate that they were that the Indian Territory in question was in fact within the state's jurisdiction rather than the tribe's.
Your Honor, I will provide a record citation before I'm done. But Oklahoma argued that it had received a delegation as to all areas within the geographic boundaries of the state, just as provided in Section 107, and that the promulgation of a rule divesting Oklahoma of regulatory jurisdiction over non-reservation areas deprived it of that jurisdiction.
Well, I'd really like to get that squared away, because if you didn't do that adequately, then the argument about the agency's authority to use a nationwide FIP, apply a nationwide FIP to these pockets of Indian Country, would be moot. I mean, it would be irrelevant. If it's not displacing your, I should have said moot, if it's not displacing your authority, it's no injury to you.
Your Honor, it is displacing our authority, and Your Honor, I refer to Joint Appendix page 100, a part of Oklahoma's comments before the agency, wherein we say that for more than 30 years, Oklahoma has exercised regulatory authority over air quality management throughout the state of Oklahoma, has established practices and procedures and so forth, and will be injured by the effective checkerboard jurisdiction implemented by the new source review rule, sir.
The document we're looking at is...
These are Oklahoma's comments with the agency on the new source review rule filed March 20th, 2007, in the joint appendix at page 100 and at page 8 of Oklahoma's comments. That structure of the Clean Air Act is critical to our arguments. Mm-hmm. The intent of the 1970 Act was to cover the entire geographic area of the United States through contiguous state implementation plans. And therefore, Section 107A provided that each approved state implementation plan, not just Oklahoma's, but all of them, would cover, quote, the entire geographic area comprising such state.
Now, this document is labeled supplemental comments on the proposed FIP.
Yes, sir.
Supplemental meaning what? Is this before the closure or before the issuance of the final?
During the rulemaking, sir. No.
And the argument here is that this would be unmanageable.
The argument, if first, sir, is that it's statutorily unauthorized. Congress authorized EPA to address in non-reservation areas, unlike the reservation areas this court addressed in Arizona Public Service Company in 2001, only with respect to other areas within the tribe's jurisdiction.
I'm looking at your argument 100, the paragraph you read to me.
Yes, sir.
And it continues over to 101. Where you sit, where the new paragraph is the proposed FIP would also create an unworkable check report pattern. This is the,
yes, sir,
why it's unmanageable. Right?
Yes, we
so,
do.
But where is the legal argument about this being within the state's jurisdiction as opposed to the tribes?
Your Honor, I believe our comments certainly state that we have jurisdiction within the entire geographic area comprising the state. That's stated on page 100. And we do not. Oklahoma has exercised regulatory authority over air quality management throughout the state of Oklahoma, is the language that I refer to.
Your Honor, I can. But is that as close as you come to saying that the state and not the tribes have jurisdiction here?
Your Honor, from memory, I believe that is that's the statement that I can now advise the court. I would supplement that if it's a matter of concern, but it has been the focus of our arguments from the beginning that Oklahoma has this jurisdiction, that jurisdiction was delegated to it under Clean Air Act Section 107A, and that the new source review rule with respect to non-Indian areas, not challenging reservation areas, but with respect to non-reservation areas, deprives the state of jurisdiction already delegated to it by Clean Air Act Section 107A. The Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 did not authorize, referring to the overall delegation, Your Honor, did not authorize EPA to adopt an implementation plan except in non-reservation areas with respect to areas within the jurisdiction of the tribe. They in no way took jurisdiction away from states. They did not amend Clean Air Act Section 107A. Instead, they authorized a delegation by EPA to tribes of authority with respect to the other areas within the tribe's jurisdiction, and they authorized a residual jurisdiction for EPA, a jurisdiction that was strictly limited. Oklahoma's concern is that the 1990 amendments, as implemented, let me start that again. The 1990 amendments crafted a fundamental distinction between reservation and non-reservation lands. The reservation areas addressed by this court and Arizona Public Service Company were held to have a delegation of federal authority over that entire reservation area. There's no such language with respect to non-reservation areas. The Act itself does not specifically address non-reservation areas, but refers to other areas expressly within the tribe's jurisdiction.
I don't disagree with anything you've said about the Arizona case or in your brief about the Michigan case either. What I'm looking for is where you told the EPA that the non-reservation areas here were within the state's jurisdiction and not the tribes, and that if they were therefore displaced by the FIP, it was the state that was being displaced.
Your Honor, we will be happy to supplement. It is my belief that our comments throughout take the position that we have that jurisdiction.
The closest thing I can find, and that doesn't mean that there isn't something more, but the closest thing I can find is JA-72, which is the comments on the proposed FIP, January 19, 2007. The original pagination is here. So page 72 of the J.
Yes, sir. I have it.
Okay. And it says in the first paragraph, as with the regulations at issue in Michigan, the EPA lacks authority to promulgate and administer the proposed nationwide FIP. As was the case with the regulations in Michigan, EPA here has refused to make jurisdictional determinations, as instead has reserved regulatory authority for itself. The proposed FIP thus could not be issued. Now, that's not quite saying that these areas were in the state's jurisdiction as opposed to the tribes.
Your Honor, looking at page 72 and the pages surrounding it, we have one more.
The context is that this is not a is a little different. The argument heading at 69, for instance, the proposed FIP would be unauthorized because EPA has failed to make the required jurisdictional determinations.
Your Honor,
that's an argument for not having a nationwide FIP.
That is an argument for not having a nationwide FIP with respect to non-reservation areas, because the state is regulating pursuant to delegation with respect to all areas comprising the state. The state here conceding that EPA has statutory authority to assume regulation within reservation boundaries. Your Honor, we believe our comments fairly present that argument, and I would be happy
to.
You
didn't elicit a response to that. So understood.
Yes.
Did not elicit a response from the EPA. Response is at 303 and 304, I believe.
Yes, it is, sir.
And they understood that as an objection to there being a nationwide FIP, as opposed to making particularized determinations.
Seeing that language, of course, EPA is contending here that a state is required to make a specific demonstration of jurisdiction. It's again our contention, first responding to that statement, that delegation occurred pursuant to Section 107A in the 1970s. The EPA's argument here that it has not approved a state is simply inconsistent with our view of Section 107A, which we view as a delegation to the state, and that EPA lacks statutory authority to take that away because nothing in Section 301 in the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act divests the state from that authority, sir.
You must be relying on the Michigan case.
Excuse me?
You must be relying on the Michigan case.
We rely on Michigan in this sense. Michigan says EPA cannot create a category of lands that is not specifically authorized by Congress and then declare that to be subject to, use it as a basis for assuming federal program jurisdiction. We say that's precisely what EPA has done here. Here they have said there's a category of lands, all off-reservation Indian country lands, that are not subject to state programs because we now conclude in 1990, or following, in effect in 2011, that the Clean Air Act never delegated authority to states over those lands, presumably suggesting that EPA views those lands as never having been subject to any Clean Air Act regulation prior to the implementation of the current rule. The fact is that in Oklahoma, and really in all states, because there was no other, with respect to the sources involved here, because there was no other federal program applicable to these lands, that all regulation with respect to non-reservation areas in what is described here as Indian country was contemplated to and, in fact, implemented by states pursuant to state implementation plans, which Section 107A states cover the entire geographic area comprising such states. That gap that EPA postulates, that there's a gap we must fill because nobody has authority. We say states lack this authority under federal common law, citing the Federal Criminal Code, 18 U.S.C. Section 1151, because states, they say, lack that authority because of our interpretation of that statute, there is a gap that EPA must now fill. Oklahoma takes the contrary position. There is no gap. Oklahoma and all other states receive delegations pursuant to the 1970 amendments. We have in the statutory appendix to our principal brief the EPA's approval of Oklahoma's.
Just before you get to the appendix, the statement you just made about 107.
Yes, sir.
Where is that in what you presented to the EPA?
Excuse me?
Where is that in what you presented to the EPA?
To EPA?
Yeah.
Your Honor, from memory and looking at what I'm provided, I do not find a reference to that.
That's my problem. It seems to me that your argument to the EPA was basically that they couldn't impose a FIP on a nationwide basis as opposed to going jurisdiction by jurisdiction fill the gap. But what I didn't see was the argument that from 107, I presume, that there is no gap.
Yes, sir.
If there is no gap, then it would seem to follow that they can't fill it.
That's exactly correct.
But if you haven't argued there is no gap, and you've just argued that there's no authorization for them to go on a federal, just a nationwide single FIP.
I think the question, Your Honor, is did our comments reasonably apprise EPA of the positions we are now taking?
I accept that.
And we believe our comments do precisely that. They say that we have regulated across the entire area of the state of Oklahoma.
Here's what I see. We've regulated across the entire area.
Correct.
And your doing it is unmanageable and impractical to the EPA.
We say that. And unauthorized, statutorily unauthorized.
Because of 107.
Because of 107, but also because Section 301D limits EPA's authority to approve a tribal program and therefore to step in with any federal program to other areas within a tribe's jurisdiction.
Okay, so where is that?
Excuse me?
As with 107, I'd like to know where you argue that.
And that is what? Okay. Your Honor, I have additional matters. We do address in our January 19, 2007 comments, Joint Appendix page 67, with respect to gaps or deficiencies, commenting on EPA's proposal under Section 110C of the Act, and its proposal that it is empowered to fill a gap, that gaps or deficiencies must be filled or corrected by a FIP, must be done in a way enumerated by Section 7410C. We say that the notice is merely asserted there is a regulatory gap in Indian Country, fails to satisfy any of the limited grounds that would authorize the issuance of a FIP under 42 U.S.C. Section 7410C, because the notice and the administrative record fail to satisfy the requirements, EPA is without authority to issue the proposed FIP. Certainly, Your Honor, EPA was on notice that we considered them to lack authority to issue the FIP, but it was also very clearly on notice that we considered other areas to over which tribes have jurisdiction not to be coextensive with the federal Indian Country definition. It's our view that Congress had important reasons for distinguishing between reservation and non-reservation lands in Section 301 of the Act. Those reasons entailed policy, which Judge Ginsburg, you've mentioned as efficiency, manageable, and so forth. EPA recognized, and this court addressed, in both Michigan 2 and the Arizona Public Service case, that within reservation boundaries, when EPA was arguing for a broad pattern of jurisdiction, that checkerboarding and scattered parcels of land under different jurisdictions were inefficient and counterproductive. The same considerations were recognized to apply with respect to non-reservation areas, and we submit our reason Congress distinguished between the two. The facts on the ground require a distinction between those two areas. Off-reservation areas may be populated primarily and generally are by non-members on non-member-owned lands, on previously large reservation areas that are now mostly non-member in character. Residents may be living on isolated allotments miles distant from tribal headquarters. The TSR rule does not address those considerations. It is striking that in the proposed rulemaking and the final rulemaking, EPA never separately addresses the legal or factual considerations applicable to non-reservation areas. It does not separately address the policy considerations as to checkerboarding that it argued to this court in Michigan and Arizona Public Service Company. Instead, it relies exclusively on the, quote, Indian Country statute. And a single footnote in both the proposed rulemaking and the final rulemaking that cites two cases for propositions that tribes generally, is the term, lack, have, and states generally, is the term, lack jurisdiction in, quote, Indian country. Not separately analyzing non-reservation, but just saying Indian country, which, as the court may know, covers all areas within the boundaries of reservations and other kinds of lands that may be on or off reservation, including allotments and dependent Indian communities, an issue here. But it doesn't analyze beyond the to those two cases, the Supreme Court's case law allocating jurisdiction as between states and tribes. I'm already over my time, if I may take a bit more. There are really two cases, perhaps three, that define jurisdiction as between states and tribes. None of them are mentioned in this rulemaking. There's White Mountain Apache Tribe versus Bracker, which we brief. There's Montana versus United States, which we brief. And there's Brendale versus Confederated Tribes. Bracker, as to state authority with respect to on-reservation lands. Montana, as to tribal authority with respect to on-reservation lands. And Brendale, which finds, which looks at state versus tribal jurisdiction in lands all within reservation boundaries. These are on-reservation cases. But the court in each case says, we must look at a complicated set of factors to determine whether the state of the tribe has jurisdiction here. They involve land status. They involve the actors involved. They involve the demographics of the area. They involve, as Bracker says, balancing federal, state, and tribal interests. None of that is done with respect to non-reservation lands in the Indian Country NSR rule.
Thank you, Mr. Slade.
May I? I'd like to ask a question about the applicability of this statute passed in 2005, peculiar to Oklahoma. It's known by the acronym SAFETEA, S-A-F-E-T-E-A. What is your position on the applicability of that statute? In other words, it seems to say that that EPA must approve a state SIP that you submit in areas of Indian country in Oklahoma, and it seems to be only Oklahoma. I haven't heard you mention that statute. What's your position on its applicability?
Judge Anderson, Oklahoma submits the statutes not material to our case today.
Why?
Oklahoma does have such an authority. There are a number of legal considerations that probably are beyond the interest of the court today, but simply we have not exercised the option that is provided in that amendment to the 2005 Transportation Act, and therefore we do not believe it's material to the issues before the court.
Well, it seems to me that if you had used it, this whole thing might have been obviated. I mean, aren't you the author of your own misfortune? You have a way to say to EPA, here's the SIP we submit for Indian country, and you have to approve it, EPA, and you haven't done that.
Your Honor, the concern Oklahoma has with electing the option provided in the Act is that it is categorical as to all lands, and EPA in Oklahoma is not opposed to the on-reservation provisions, though reservation lands in Oklahoma are quite limited, and is does not want so broad a result. It wants to continue its regulation with respect to non-reservation lands, and believes it's entitled to do so, and therefore is before the court today.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm David Carson on behalf of EPA. And I would first like to touch on the basis for EPA's rulemaking in this case and then address ODEQ's arguments regarding its authority and what it presented to EPA. In this case, EPA filled a gap in Indian Country for Clean Air Act coverage for two Clean Air Act programs, and it did so under Clean Air Act Section 301D4 and the Tribal Authority Rule. 301D4 and the Tribal Authority Rule provide EPA with the authority to fill gaps within Indian Country. And these rules are strictly limited only to Indian Country, and they apply only until such time as EPA approves a non-federal plan to take their place. The fundamental factual underpinnings for EPA's rule, which frankly have not been challenged here, is that very few tribes have applied to administer a minor NSR programs within Indian Country, that no tribe has applied to administer a major non-attainment NSR program in Indian Country, and with very limited exceptions set forth in footnote 2 of our brief, EPA has not explicitly approved any state to administer these programs in Indian Country.
Can I stop you there? You say EPA has not explicitly approved any state, right?
That's correct.
I suppose that you know, that's true. But what I understood Oklahoma to be arguing is that the SIP, when it was approved, had a certain geographical parameter. It would exclude things that were clearly Indian Country, clearly reservation within the reservation. To the extent that there were other areas where there was not inherent Indian jurisdiction and where the tribe had not made any affirmative showing of jurisdiction, those would be included under the state SIP.
Yeah. There's a couple problems with their argument, one of which is, you know, Mr. Slade discusses this federal Indian case law and whatnot, but the state has not made any of the kind of affirmative factual showings that it would need to make to show that it has authority within non-reservation areas of Indian Country. So the shoe is on their foot as well. And the other problem is what they argue is, if you take a fair look at their argument, they say that they should be presumed to have authority to regulate in these off-reservation areas of Indian Country. And they get there in two ways. They get there by Section 107 of the Clean Air Act. And that is an argument that they did not make to EPA. Nowhere this morning have they pointed out where they made it. In fact, I think Mr. Slade conceded that there's nowhere that they've made it. In their reply brief, and what they're saying here this morning is that, well, our arguments were fairly before EPA. But nowhere did they make that specific statutory construction argument before EPA in the context of this rulemaking. And this court's case law on waiver is very strict, and it should be even more strict for a statutory construction argument, because in those circumstances where a statutory construction argument is not made to the agency, then the agency doesn't fairly have an opportunity in the context of the rulemaking to set forth its interpretation that's entitled to Chevron deference.
They do make that argument in their brief, though, and does EPA make a waiver argument?
Yes, we did specifically make a waiver argument with respect to the Section 107 argument.
Forfeiture, really?
Forfeiture. Correct, yes. And if you were to consider the argument, frankly, it's wrong. I mean, Congress can expressly provide that states will have jurisdiction in Indian Country, but Section 107 doesn't say that. It doesn't mention Indian Country or any part of Indian Country, like reservations or allotments. It doesn't even mention Indians. And, you know, a key problem with ODEQ's argument here is that under Section 110A2 and EPA's regulations, state SIPs have to be explicitly approved by EPA before they're federally enforceable, and states have to demonstrate that they have jurisdiction. And, of course, with respect to Indian Country, that takes a special showing that was never made. So the fact that EPA may have approved this state SIP or any other state SIP at any particular point in time doesn't mean that it automatically covers Indian Country. The state would have had to have demonstrated that. And they never here show that they did. Again, it's a presumption. And, in fact, I would point out that at 67, this is in the EPA's final rulemaking in this case, at 67 Federal Register 38779, EPA specifically found that neither the state of Oklahoma nor any Oklahoma tribe has applied for EPA approval to administer either of the NSR programs for any area of Indian country. They do not challenge that. Instead, they argue that they must be presumed to have jurisdiction. And again, under 107, they're simply wrong. Their 107 argument is also in conflict with 301D4, where Congress did provide a role for tribes, did provide a role for EPA to fill gaps within Indian country. And as we pointed out in our brief, their argument is contrary to the canon of construction that if there is ambiguity, that ambiguity should be resolved in favor of the tribes. And it's also inconsistent with Chevron. Here, EPA's interpretation is completely consistent with the canon of construing ambiguous provisions in favor of tribes and completely consistent with Chevron because it recognizes that under Section 110A2, states must demonstrate their authority and EPA must approve their authority before they can apply in any particular area. And, you know, EPA simply doesn't have the authority to give a state jurisdiction within Indian country unless Congress is either expressly provided for it or unless a state makes a showing under federal common Indian law principles, which has not occurred in this case.
What about the safety? This statute back in 05 that I asked Mr. Slade about, hasn't Congress given Oklahoma and only Oklahoma the authority to do what you just alluded to?
Only if Oklahoma requests authority, which they haven't done.
But that's what I keep wondering, why, since that seems to be the solution to this, at least to Oklahoma's resistance to the FIP, why are you not arguing that they, as I said before, are the author of their own misfortune? All they have to do is pull the trigger on that statute, and they've got authority.
I think that's correct. I mean, they would still have to come to EPA and request authority, but I don't think safety sets
And you have to, according to my reading of this statute, you have to approve it, assuming that it's a reasonable submission.
Right. It's somewhat, well, I guess we've heard the explanation we're going to hear this morning, but it is somewhat inexplicable that Oklahoma comes in here and tries to upset this entire national rulemaking when the state does have this special provision that applies only to them.
And the answer I hear Mr. Slade give is, well, we don't want to do that.
Well, I think what he said is that they don't want authority over informal reservations within Oklahoma. They just want authority over off-reservation areas. In particular, they're concerned that they've raised as allotments. But I would point out that regardless of how they want to go about it, they can still apply for program authority here. EPA has not precluded that. EPA's rule expressly provides that it only applies until it's replaced by a non-federal plan. And so any tribe within an Oklahoma or ODEQ can come in and say, look, we have authority here. Please approve our application. And they have to make whatever showing that they have to make. That has not occurred here.
Isn't it the other way around? Please approve our application so that we do have authority?
I'm sorry.
I thought the sequence is please approve our application so that we have authority here.
Right.
Not we have authority here, so please approve our
application. Well, what I'm saying is they would have to demonstrate that they have authority to enforce their plan within Indian country.
How would they do that?
Well, he's mentioned the case law. I mean, they would have to make some showing under the federal case law. Right, right.
How is what you're doing here different than Michigan? In other words, all the same arguments that you're making here should presumably have meant that you would have prevailed under Michigan, if that's right.
Well, yeah, it's fundamentally different because the problem the court found in Michigan was that EPA was taking jurisdiction over areas where the Indian country status of it was in question. Here, EPA's rule applies only to Indian country. So if an area is not Indian country,
but
it simply doesn't apply.
But you haven't defined what that is when you're outside the reservation, right?
Oh, sure we have. We defined it the same way that it was defined in, as discussed in the Arizona Public Service Company case, and as discussed in Michigan, and it's under 18 U.S.C. 1151, which is 1151B is dependent Indian communities, and 1151C are allotments that are either restricted allotments or trust allotments.
Right.
So I think all the parties understand what it applies to, and I think that was very clear in EPA's rulemaking, and it's very clear in the case law what that is. And if you look at the case law, I mean, particularly if you look at the Sac and Fox Nation case, which is discussed at length in our brief and barely mentioned in Oklahoma's brief, you'll see that the dividing line between when a state is presumed not to have authority and when EPA and tribes are presumed to have authority under general principles of federal Indian law is Indian country. And the court, I think, in that case even describes it as kind of a territorial extent of a tribe's normal jurisdiction. So there's really, it's really an entirely different case from what went on in Michigan. And I think a fair reading of Michigan really is that with respect to areas that are Indian country, then EPA can promulgate a FIP if a tribe doesn't seek program authority, or if a tribe, or if EPA disapproves a tribe's application, which is, of course, is expressly what's provided for in the tribal authority rule under which EPA took its action in this case.
But in the tribal authority rule, wouldn't the tribe have to provide a map, you know, something that shows you exactly what this area is that they are purporting to have jurisdiction over, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, it's not just some definition of Indian country, right? They have to show you exactly what it is.
That's correct.
Okay, and so why then doesn't EPA, if it's going to say this is clear what these areas are, why wouldn't you have to do the same thing? Why is it enough to simply say, well, Indian country, and that takes care of it?
Well, under 301D4, Congress has provided that EPA can promulgate federal regulations when it determines that it's administratively infeasible to treat tribes in the same manner as states under that kind of analysis. And so here EPA found that it really was administratively infeasible for it to go out and you know, do a separate FIP, if you will, parceling out each area of Indian country. And so EPA acted within its authority by, you know, having this FIP that applies to all of Indian country without having a map or showing it. And there's simply no requirement under the TAR or 301D4 that EPA do that.
But as I understand it, you have this authority only if you're either in the shoes of the state or you're in the shoes of the tribe, correct? I mean, am I not understanding how this works?
I think if you look at Michigan, when the Michigan court was discussing that, it was really discussing this distinction between Indian country and non-Indian country. And the court even noted the general rule from Venati that within Indian country, that is the area in which state authority is presumed not to exist, and tribal and federal authority is presumed to exist. So in this case, EPA took that general presumption into account, that general rule of federal Indian law into account. And again, I think the Michigan case shows, I mean, it specifically says at one point that the court says, thus, under Section 301, EPA may treat qualifying tribes as states, and if the tribes fails to meet the requirements set under Section 502, then EPA must implement a federal program.
Exactly, but why, you know, the Congress doesn't say Indian country. It says treat the tribes as states, and it describes precisely what that jurisdiction is or what they have to do if the jurisdiction isn't per se, that is, within the lines of the reservation. So that's what I'm trying to understand. Why is EPA reading this differently than Congress does? Congress could have just said Indian country. Congress could have said pursuant to this criminal statute which describes Indian country. They need neither one. So why does EPA then get to interpret this statute, which didn't use that language, as if it did.
Well, I guess my primary response to that is that this court has already upheld the tribal authority rule as applying to these off-reservation areas of Indian country. And I don't, frankly, don't recall in that case whether it used the term Indian country, but it clearly discussed allotments and dependent Indian communities and found that tribes could have authority there. So regardless of whether we call it Indian country or we just call it reservations, allotments, and dependent Indian communities, it's the same general area. So the court has already upheld the rule as applying that far.
I'm not taking issue with whether or not they could exercise jurisdiction. I assume, though, that if they did it, they would have to do it consistent with the general statute. In other words, it wouldn't be different then. They would have a way of showing that their jurisdiction extended to these areas.
That's right. But fundamentally, though, regardless of whether it's a tribe or a state, before their plan can be approved, the state has to do the same thing. And that's the reason there's a gap here. As I said, EPA found that with very limited exception, and those exceptions are mentioned in footnote 2 of our brief, EPA has not approved states to run these programs within Indian country. And EPA found that very few tribes had even applied for it. In fact, that was one of the fundamental underpinnings of the tribal authority rule and why EPA carved out Section 110C, the FIP requirements that apply to states, is that EPA recognized that it would take tribes some time to develop plans and that some tribes might not be interested in developing plans at all. But that doesn't mean that they wouldn't have authority if they actually did so. So that's why there's a gap here. And again, all EPA is doing is filling this gap for whatever temporary time period exists until another regulatory entity, be it a state or a tribe, makes an explicit showing that they have jurisdiction, and EPA then approves that program in the place of the federal plan.
So,
Mr.
Mike, correct in thinking that in the case of Oklahoma, that all they have to show is that they have an approved SIP?
Well, they would have to show, I'm sorry, you're talking about under Safe T, or you're talking, they would still have to come in and request program authority under Safe T.
Right.
Yes.
They don't have to make a showing with regard to every allotment.
If they choose to rely on Safe T, then they'll be going under Safe T, correct. I see I'm well beyond my time. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that the court deny the petition for review and uphold EPA's rules in this case.
I'm sorry, how much time does counsel have left? Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes, Mr. Steinberg.
As to 107, excuse me, and the assertion that EPA has never approved a plan or approved very few plans with respect to Indian lands, in 1973, as we show in our statutory appendix at page 90, which contains the CFR publication of Oklahoma's plan, in 1973, after we filed under the 1970 Act, EPA approved that plan, quote, statewide, including its legal authority, quote, statewide. No other interpretation of Section 107 can achieve Congress's express goal of covering the entire country with contiguous plans covering all 50 states. As to the Indian country label, satisfying EPA's duty, subject to Congress's limitation, that tribal plans be approved and EPA may have residual jurisdiction only over lands within the tribe's jurisdiction. Our view is EPA has not supported that as a matter of federal common law. The Atkinson Trading case says the two are not consistent. It is the only U.S. Supreme Court holding squarely on the subject of whether 18 U.S.C. 1151 defines regulation authority between tribes and states. The other cases I cited earlier are to the effect that one must look at that complicated set of factors in Bracker and Montana. In Arizona and Michigan, but specifically in Arizona Public Service, the court was clear that with respect to non-reservation areas, that a tribe must show its jurisdiction over the lands to be subject to a delegation. EPA cannot adopt a federal program that covers any broader set of lands. Even EPA's own authority that they advocate in the rules says generally lack authority as to states, generally have as to tribes. EPA did not recognize in the rule any limitations. If it's generally, that means there are some yes and some exceptions. EPA regulates under the FIP, under the NSR rule, universally. All lands that are described as Indian country under 18 U.S.C. 1151 are subject to a FIP. It's not generally, it's universally. EPA's own authority doesn't cut it. The Sac and Fock case is about taxation by a state of a reservation, of a member of a tribe living on an allotment land and working on tribal lands, all right? So it's a situation where there's just no implication for non-members. Unlike the every source that will be regulated under the new source rule in non-Indian country, where those isolated parcels are going to be surrounded by non-members on non-member lands. And they might be, as in a recent case, 60 miles different from the tribal headquarters with few, if any, tribal members living in between. The cases do not support a universal, categorical determination that all allotments and dependent Indian communities in all off-reservation lands in America are subject to tribes regulation. Thank you.
Excuse me. What was the page you just cited in the statutory amendment?
90, sir.